Welcome to the Tabletop Sportcast. I'm your host, James Cast. Today's February 18th, 2024, and this is episode 154. Today we're sitting down with Lenny LaFrance, and Lenny is a member of the community. He helps run a couple of fictional leagues, and that's going to be the basis for today's conversation. He is taking part in the Interprovincial Football Conference, the IPFC. That is the fictional Cold Snap League, originally started by Keith Avalone of Play Games. And Lenny really took over the creation of it a few years back. You're going to hear more about that in the episode. And then he has his Eastern Adirondack Baseball League, as well as his Weekend Baseball League and the North Country Baseball League. And this is kind of a baseball universe that Lenny has created for his own personal use. And we're going to hear about that as well. As always, if you'd like to get in touch with me, send an email to tabletopsportcast@gmail.com. Love to hear any questions you have about the episodes, topic ideas, or just to tell me about your latest projects. If you want to check out the latest from my tabletop, head on over to facebook.com/tabletopsportcast, where I post a few times a week to try to keep you up to date on everything that's happening on my tabletop. And then finally, if you'd like to help support the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/tabletopsportcast. $1 a month goes a long way to helping to offset costs for the podcast. I just posted a quick audio clip for all of my patrons, giving them updates on what is going to be the quarterly hangout in March, and decided to rebrand that as Tabletop Sportcast Live. So we're going to be doing a live recording for all Patreon members. The rest of the audience will get to hear it the next morning. But right now that is scheduled for March 23rd. So more to come on that. But I gave a few more details to the Patreon subscribers, since they will be the ones who will be part of that live audience. All right, we're going to skip the Tabletop Sportcast recap, or the tabletop recap, and get right to the interview that I was able to record this week with Lenny LaFrance. All right, I am sitting down tonight with Lenny LaFrance, and Lenny is a member of our gaming community and runs a couple of fictional leagues that we're going to touch on today. And Lenny, it's been a while since we got a chance to touch base at play.con, but how have you been?
Good, busy, but good.
All right, good to hear. And I know recently you've been pretty busy with some of your leagues, but before we get to those, I wanted to, you know, kind of start where I usually start with a lot of our guests, which is let's talk about your history with tabletop sports. Like, when did it really get going for you?
Sure. So it probably happened, I'm almost 45, so it probably happened when I was about 9 years old, I think 9 or 10, maybe 8. We had a churchyard sale, and one of the older adults, sorry, not older, one of the older young adults in our church had a APA baseball set, 1979, the game. And so no one bought it at the yard sale, so we ended up picking it up along with a Kadeko All-Star Baseball. Oh. And so I really started playing a lot of APA, or I still refer to it as APBA, because
yeah,
APA just sounds weird. But I know that's probably, you know, a mortal sin for some people. But that's where I started, you know, a lot of APA baseball with Kadeko, you know, the spinnings with the discs. Myself, my brother make our own discs. And then once I really love numbers. And so even as a, you know, 8, 9, 10 year old, I love numbers. And I'd have charts, I'd have, you know, graph sheets, I'd have books of graph, you know, graph paper. I just love putting numbers down and tracking stuff. I got into, you know, around the same time, APA basketball, the original game that I think I've never, actually, I think I've played like 2 games ever. I got the 2 official games of the shorter version of it. And then I also picked up some APA golf at that age too. And then when I went to in high school, I started playing some APA basketball, the second edition, and then APA hockey, and then APA football. that was all really in my youth. It kind of moved me in this direction. Of course, there's a lot more games now I play.
Yeah, right. And was sports a big part of your youth as well? Like playing sports and everything? Was this just a nice extension for you to be able to play it, you know, in the free time?
Yeah, I mean, I played a lot of baseball growing up, a lot of Little League. That was really my thing. I was I was kind of a short, stout kid, and so I could really drive the ball. So I was a pretty good hitter. I found my home at first base because I could stretch and I can catch. I was an amazing, I was not a great fielder, but I could definitely catch balls and pick up balls off the ground. Played football for, I think, a year in middle school. And then I actually went to a Christian boarding school for 4 years for high school. So our opportunities there for sports was pretty low. But I played basketball. Actually was the captain of my team my last year. Although I was not the best player on the team, I was good. I could shoot and I could pass and I could shoot both left and right. It wasn't a whole lot of opportunity at that school, but we also played a lot of floor hockey. That was I hung out with a lot of the Canadians that were there in New York at our school, and we played a lot of floor hockey.
That wasn't like inline, right? That was probably like deck hockey kind of an approach, right?
No rollerblades, just straight feet on the ground with sticks and in a gymnasium. And actually that rolled into college as well. We had a pretty big floor hockey intramural season at one of the colleges I went to.
Oh, cool. Yeah. All right. Very cool. And were you like a lot of us that the tabletop sports became like were you big into baseball cards and all that kind of stuff at that in your youth as well?
Yeah. Myself and my brother, I have a brother and a sister, but my brother, who's a little bit older than I am, and I had some uncles that are actually, one's younger than I am, one's older than I am, and so we all kind of grew up together. And so, you know, we're always involved with baseball cards, going to baseball card events, going to the baseball card shop. Of course, you know, we always pick up cards. Like, I have a ton of D. Brown basketball, like rookie cards, which are worth probably nothing, but I thought they're pretty cool. They are pretty cool. We did a lot of anything baseball we were involved in. And my brother still, he collects a lot of baseball cards. He goes to auctions and he goes to estates and he buys boxes of cards.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then I my son now I also get cards for. So he's also into those as well.
Cool. All right. So a lot of APPA. And what are some of your favorite games these days? Is it still a lot of APPA or do you have, you mentioned you have a lot of games that you like now. So.
Yeah, I've transitioned a lot from APPA. I sold actually most of my APPA baseball collection recently. I had pretty all the 90s or all the 80s and 90s seasons. I got rid of them. I just wasn't playing or had replayed a season with actually a full season with the Mets. But right now, my biggest things on my tabletop are normally History Maker Baseball from Play Games, Classic College and Pro Basketball, which is probably the best basketball game on the market. Hands down, Mike, drop the mic. I do a lot of Vermont Catamounts replays and then also Celtics replays. I've been playing some SSG basketball, Red, White, and Blue Raisin, of course, Cold Snap, second season. And I play a lot of other non-sports games. So I like the really dumbed down versions of Warhammer, like the Space Marine Adventures. You can buy at Barnes & Noble and then Star Wars Imperial Assault. And I have a ton of block war games for like Civil War. Mm-hmm. And so I like historical war or battle games as well.
Okay, very cool. All right, let's talk a little bit about Cold Snap. You're currently running a couple of fictional leagues, but we'll start with the IFPC. So just tell us a little bit about the league and how you got involved with it.
Yeah, it's an interprovincial football conference, I believe it is now. I can't always forget the official name of it.
Yeah.
We've had it so much. It's a Cold Snap. It's a Cold Snap fictional league. Cold Snap is, of course, Play Games. Keith Avalon started the league when Cold Snap came out in 2010. It was the Canadian partner of Football America for the United States. And so he had three or four seasons he conducted from 2010 all the way to 2013. And then 2014, he was going to discontinue making that product. And so I asked him, hey, I've been doing replays with our Quebec team for the past 3 or 4 years. You know, do you mind if I, you know, just pick up where you left off? Because he did an amazing job of actually documenting players and years and summaries. So I kind of picked up where he was and started making those since 2014. In 2015, I offered out to the play group that I'm looking at establishing a cooperative league. We had, I think, 8 teams at that time. Now there's 10 teams, but we ran 4 coaches for 8 teams. So we actually replayed an entire season as a cooperative team or cooperative league, where most of us were assigned a specific team, and then we just pick up other games. And yeah, since 2015, we've switched commissioners. So I was initial commissioner, then it was Peter Miller, and now it's Jeff Tomlinson. And so I'm kind of the guy in the background now who's making the league, created it, is creating it. And I'm not as much involved in the actual playing of the league or commissioning, except that people are looking for, more like a consultant now on that side, just from timing wise. But yeah, the league is now staffed. We have 10 teams now. We expanded a couple years ago to 10 teams, and they have 10 coaches, and they have people on the waiting list as well.
Wow. Impressive. So coming on, I guess, 10 seasons that you've been running it. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think this will be the, I'm working this actually today, but I think this is season 11 I've done now.
Wow. Very cool. And I noticed recently on like the Play Games, like Facebook page, you were posting, you guys just had your annual draft, right?
Yeah. So how the draft is always, we'd love to do a live draft, and actually talking to Keith about that. We'd like to, get everyone together and actually draft players. So what happens is that I also run a create a league of its 28 Canadian colleges and universities called the ACCU. So I can create several different leagues. So the ACCU develops fictional players to go into the IFPC. And so out of the that college base, we adjust players to see how good they'll be actually in the IFPC. And then I send those sheets out to the coaches, say, hey, who wants to, just give me a list of priorities of who you want to pick, or positions, or what your overall theme is. And so I got less than half coaches decided to do that. But yeah, once we got the list, I already knew the order based on the standings last year. Mm-hmm. And so we just go through and I start picking based on the coaches, what they wanted. That's when we started just picking players for them.
Very cool. And I really liked, you had almost scouting reports, right? Like of each player and everything. So, and I guess that's easier to do since you actually have, in a sense, real players, because they've actually been going to college for a couple of years, right?
Yeah. So, and part of it is when I develop these things, I make some charts, of course, roll on percents. And so they can either be a bust, they can play as expected, or they can be a sleeper. And so if they're a bust, obviously they lose significant points for overall ratings. If they're expected, they'll play quasi as we expect them to play. And then if they're a sleeper, their points will go up a little bit. Oh, okay. And then of course, throughout their career, their ratings will go up and down.
Got it. That makes sense. And then, knowing how Cold Snap and second season work, but we'll focus on Cold Snap. The ratings that you had in the draft as part of the scouting report is not exactly going to be how they're rated in the game, right? So talk a little bit about that and how that works for you.
Sure. So when I create, I do a lot of research on this just to see what players, how the players should be rated. So I look at just primarily the rating. So the pass and the run rating. So obviously a two is the max on both ends. So a player could have a total of 4 points. So if we have a player that has 3.5 stars out of 4, in theory, they could be, the highest grade could be, a 2 on pass and a 1.5 on run, or 1.5 on pass, 2 on run. That's their max potential. However, the later they go in the draft, the more I start reducing points. So if you're in the fourth round and you're a quarterback, rated as a 3 out of 4, you're probably going to start as a 1 out of 4, and you're probably going to max out maybe at a 3 if you ever get there, because it's likely in the, how I have it designed, you may not get there because you may hit a season where you drop below a certain point, which automatically pushes you out of the league.
Oh, okay. Wow. And does any of it get impacted by the quality of the team that they're going to? Do you have a way of kind of balancing out the ratings?
Yeah, balance is everything I do with fictional is all about balance. So once I get my initial charts of, hey, this player this year could be a 2-2, could be 2 pass, 2 run. But once I put them all together, the team, I put the starters together, including the draft picks, I get the total point values, and then I put it into a separate spreadsheet, and then it balances out. So in theory, if we have 10 teams, there should be 120 overall offensive passing points. There should be 120 overall running points, same on defense. And so we balance the numbers out. So everything equals overall as a league, 120, 120, 120 on both defense as well.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. All right. Good. So what are some of the challenges you find that in just trying to run the fictional league?
Yeah, I think starting with creation is probably pretty challenging. It's time consuming. So I have multiple different files. I have a master file list where I go through and I have every single player, you know, it's year to year. So I can see players that retired. If I went back, you know, 10 years ago, I can see a list of retired players still. Just the creation and updating. The biggest thing actually running a league is engagement with the people that are involved. It's really difficult to run a online group. Actually, one of my grad school projects was on, I actually wrote a paper about running the IFPC Cooperative League. One of my professors allowed me to do that, which they thought was pretty cool. After they, at first they're like, I don't know about this, but once they read it, they thought it was pretty good. But the engagement piece is, you know, if I give you a timeline, hey, you have 2 weeks to play a game and you don't play that game, how do you, you know, how do you address that? But also how do you keep people engaged that halfway along? Hey guys, remember, you know, next week the game is due. Timelines is big. You know, in our first couple of years, we had people that were in the league. You know, we'd say, you have a 2 week period to play one game. It'd be a month out. They still haven't played it. And then we have to address that issue. And then the biggest thing is making sure people play with integrity. Because again, for us, we have our home teams play the game. So if I'm Quebec and you're London, I would play the game. You'd shoot me some preferences, like your plus or minus for offense and defense. You tell me certain things that are not too ridiculous.
Right.
But yeah, that's the hard thing is people playing with integrity. And I think we've seen some of it where sometimes I know the numbers, I know the data, and I know what teams should be projected. So there's no way a team that, you know, has 32 points is beating a team that has 55 overall points. You know, that and they're on the road, you know. So one thing we thought about doing is, you know, having the away coaches play because they're not going to have that home field advantage. But that's really the big challenge is engagement, timelines, and this making sure people play with integrity.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. Like the games are based on statistics, right? There's only certain ranges that you can really have like expected performance. And, you know, once in a while, maybe an outlier is there, but it's hard to imagine it happening more than once, right? So, absolutely. Yeah. That totally aligns. And I know you covered a lot of this too at play.con, talking about like your kind of creation process. And just to recap for anybody who wasn't there, like one of the things that's very different in your approach to like the way Keith mentioned that he creates, like when Keith does it, he has an idea about where he wants the league to go and then kind of make sure that things work out a certain way. But for you, it's going to be based on these charts that you've created, right?
Yeah, I'm not a, you know, people, of course, in a game world right now love narrative. That's probably the least thing I like. If I roll on second season, I don't care what it says. Just tell me how many yards I gain or lose. I don't care about, you know, got pushed back or hit by a linebacker. Don't care. Just tell me how many yards.
Yeah.
For some people it works. For me, I just don't. It's just not what I do. But it's fine. People do it that way. It's absolutely okay. Just not my way. But yeah, I really run by charts. So like football, I'm consistent across the board. So if a quarterback comes in the league, he could have, I think I have 5 or 6 different levels. Where, you know, a baseline zero, you'll have an average season for your baseline numbers. If you, have they're different, I call them green seasons, but their green is good. So darker green is like the best season you could have. So you could hit your max potential that year. So if your team is awesome, you know, you get a player that has a two and a two. But that's really how I run that. And then for when I do baseball, it's a little bit different. But I roll those out to see. You know, I think it's one you drop below, 6 you would advance. And also depending on your age group, you may have modifiers that bump down. But then I guess I still balance everything out. So you're not having completely out of whack stats.
Cool. Now, when you create a player, and it sounds like you're creating them first for your college league, right? Do you have an idea about what their potential is going to be as a pro at the beginning of their college? Or is it something you kind of re-baseline once they've, once you move them over to like the pro league there?
Yeah, there's no, nothing. I don't really project like certain players to be better. Obviously sometimes I'm like, oh, that player has a really good name. It has a really good football name. Let's make him, you know, let's make him be somebody, you know, important in the IFPC. But for the most part, so when, you know, a freshman goes to become a sophomore, then I think there's a half or a full bump. And from a sophomore to a junior, there's a full bump. And from a junior to a senior, there's a maybe half a bump. Mm-hmm. But I have a whole certain system. That's how I work it. And then I still balance it out at the end. But yeah, I'm not really immediately saying, hey, this guy's gonna get 2 and a 2. It could be, hey, this team, Cabot and Cartier have, they're missing a wide receiver, their freshman wide receiver who was a one negative, you know, slash zero for his pass run. He's going to be the starter now. So now I'm going to bump him up either half or a full point.
Okay.
So that's how some of it's done. And really kind of the needs of the team at that time, but still not looking to, you know, overrate people or underrate people, just kind of fill the gaps. Realistically, we're not going to have freshmen that are, you know, at our topped out there at their ratings. We may have some good freshmen, but no one that's, you know, going to take over the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in the evolution of your league, you know, coming up on 11 seasons, right? So I'm sure you've seen some evolution in the league. Is it really left up to chance, or is it that do the owners actually have an ability to influence that based on how good they are at managing their roster, or is it really random?
I think it's more random than I'd actually like it to be. Usually every year I reach out to people, say, hey, what do you want? You know, what are you looking for in your team? You know, like when I did the expansion draft, I asked people, you know, you can protect. I did a protection draft, or they can protect people for the draft. I got a couple of people, you know, give me feedback, and then some said, I just let the dice roll. I mean, it'd be nice to have people engaged saying, hey, I want to keep these players on my team, and then we'll see how that works. I'd like more engagement, but right now it's just more of me on my end saying, hey, you know, I have two really good running backs or three really high quality running backs on one team. You know, team Z over here is horrendous. They need a running back. So I will take one of their players, and, you know, they're now a free agent, and they're going to sign with this team over here for playing time.
Got it. And I'm guessing because you're leaving it up to the charts, it's not necessarily that, like you talked about, like balancing it to a certain point total across everything to make sure that, like, the league is, like, from year to year is pretty much, you know, competitive for each other. But teams can be really good or really bad even as you're going through the creation process, right?
Yeah, I mean, like right now, you know, we have some teams that are pretty dominant. London, who's Sean Coleman, I think he's on the show also.
Oh yeah.
He's been coaching London's for a long time. But that team's really good right now. You know, they're probably gonna be good for the next couple of years. They're going to make the final, we call it the Cartier Bowl this year, but they have a good chance of it. And some, you know, teams right now, like, you know, we have Manitoba and Pacific, who are brand new expansion teams. Mm. They're going to be at the basement for a little bit, even though they might have some flash this season for a little bit. But overall, I mean, their ratings are pretty low.
Yeah.
Same with, like, Windsor's in a slump still. They were doing really well for several years. Now they drop down to not the basement team, but kind of the basement team above the expansion teams.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah, I've heard from a few people. I think even at play.com, you guys got, was it the championship game or the last regular season game? I know a couple of folks were, I want to say it was Jeff and Mark Russell, right, that were playing.
I think they played some of the season games they played. And then I think 2022, we actually played the playoffs. We did the express version. No, we didn't do the express version. We did the full version.
Okay.
In 2022 of the playoff games.
Cool. I have the express version of Cold Snap. Do you find that it's how do you feel about, like, the full play? I'm thinking you're much more a full play person. So,
yeah, I mean, honestly, express games are, it's an ingenious model that, you know, Keith set up. As everything Keith does is pretty impressive. And
yeah,
it's amazing how his brain works. But for me, you know, I'm very OCD about numbers. And so if I can't get, you know, full statistics through Express, I'm probably not going to play Express. I own it. It's an awesome concept. It just doesn't work for me, how I game at this current time in my life.
Yeah.
Just doesn't work for me, but it's amazing concept.
And I'm always curious too, like, cause Cold Snap and Second Season are very similar game engines. Like, what's the play time for you usually to get a game in?
When I am in rhythm, I can probably an hour, hour and a half, probably.
Okay.
When I'm in rhythm, like if I'm just sitting down for, you know, it's all I'm playing is Cold Snap or Second Season for, you know, a couple months on end, I can get it down. Yeah, probably about an hour, hour and a half.
Nice. Do you use any of, like, the auto play cards or anything, or is it strictly, like, dice rolling for you?
It depends. Recently, I've been actually creating the 1991, 92, and 98 NFL seasons. I've been creating those as well. And I've been replaying some of the Buffalo Bills seasons so I can have my heart broken again. But yeah, for, like, those, I'll use the play cards. And then if it's, you know, like, if it's fictional, I'll actually use the original, the charts on the board, which work pretty well.
Okay, cool. Very good. All right, let's shift over to your baseball league. So I think more recently, the Eastern Adirondack Baseball League. Have I got that right?
Yep.
Okay. Now, is this the same league as the Weekend Baseball League, or is this a newer league?
So it's technically the same league. So back in like 2021, 22, I thought of the idea, which is interesting because Keith had the same thing a year later, the same year, about going back on some of the leagues. So I was like, I want to make a dead ball league, but it's a precursor to the current or to the 2003, 4, 5 set I put out for weekend baseball. So technically it's, you know, we had the, my thought process is we have an Eastern Adirondack Baseball League, which is based upon where I grew up in New York originally, three small counties. And then it transitioned over to weekend baseball. And now I think that in 2005, we're calling it North Country Baseball League.
Okay. Very cool. Oh, North Country Baseball League. That's right. I have seen that one as well. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that league. And we'll start with the Eastern Adirondack. So how many teams and like, where did you get started there?
Sure. So again, that was the goal is to do a dead ball because I like good pitching. I want some low scoring and lots of errors. And that it worked out well. So I said it in 1913. I did a bunch of research on Major League Baseball. Of course, that's how I do anything is with research. Look at the data points. Look at averages, batting averages. Look at home run averages. Look at stolen bases, ERAs. And so out of that, I created six teams. So if you look at upstate New York, the northeast corner of the state, there's Franklin, Clinton, where I grew up, and then Essex counties. I took the six largest towns or cities out of those locations, and I named my teams after those locations. And you got to think of it like amateur baseball or like a town-based baseball, where this is not professional baseball. This is, you know, I go to work from 9 to 5 or, you know, 7 to 5, and then I play baseball, you know, on the weekends, you know, on Saturday and Sunday. And so it's in the 1910s, it'll be 50 game seasons. And obviously now that we've progressed to the, you know, the 2003 was our first weekend baseball, then 4, and I'm on 5 right now. That's now it's 12 teams, and we play about 74 games each team.
Very cool.
Full replay.
Got it.
So it takes a couple scorebooks to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a solo league, right? This is not a cooperative effort, right?
Yeah. It's a solo league. Again, I'm pretty history maker baseball. It's a phenomenal game. For fictional, it is the game. And, you know, I can probably zoom through a game and, you know, depending on how, I mean, for dead ball, it could be 15 minutes actual gameplay, of course, 5 minute setup. But, you know, 30 minutes for a game, you could do a, you know, 3-game series pretty quick.
Yeah, that's true. And do you use all the game day charts and everything to help like influence?
Somewhat. I do some of the injuries, but honestly, to cut down some of the timing, I'm not too, you know, not too worried about some of the hot cold. I've kind of eliminated some of those other optional things that are, you know, they work, but for me, it's just, I streamline a little bit more and I have other, you know, system in place for how availability and I rank people availability and do some dice rolls to see who we're going to check, who can play the game that day or not play the game.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a good way to do it too. Very cool. All right. So do you find any differences in your approach for the fictional between football and baseball?
I mean, I think the baseline balancing is the same, except, you know, when the adjustment modification from season to season is different. Football, I have established charts like every year, one for every quarterback is going to be the across the board to be equal. It's just too challenging to move up and down. So, but again, you have enough variety of people years experience that it modifies quite well. And again, the charts are all based on research I got from an article years ago about different positions and when they peak out their best performers, what year. And then for baseball, some more of, you know, I look at their age. I have a chart for prospects. Prospects, semi-prospects, semi-icons, icons in no designation at all. I take that into effect and it gives me a plus or minus off a die roll. And on that die roll, I then look at the charts and make some adjustments.
Okay. And then you're going to true it back to like runs per game averages and stuff.
Yeah. So how I do it for like baseball, you know, if I say I'm going to say, batting average of 281 to 300 is a 3. I give that a value of 3. And so say my overall league average is 290. So the overall league average will be, you know, probably 3 or 3.0, somewhere 3.5, some of that in that realm. And so when I get all my teams together and do some math with the starters, it should be in the same general ballpark as that the value I initially made to begin with.
Okay, cool. Very nice. All right. And is fictional pretty much the primary way you enjoy tables top sports these days?
I think so. Like, you know, right now I'm working on the 1998 Buffalo Bills season.
Yeah.
With good old Doug Flutie, because I like Doug Flutie. But primarily, the games on my table are usually going to be History Maker Baseball, either the Eastern Adirondack or the North Country Baseball or Weekend Baseball, which is a weekend baseball league. Or I'll throw a classic college and pro basketball Vermont season on my table, and I'm working on like my third or fourth replay for that game as well.
Very
yes, cool. Cool game. They actually make they used to make all the teams for NCAA, including the mid majors.
Yeah, I got to ask you about that game because I'm not familiar with that game at all. So tell me a little bit about that game.
Yeah, so it's a card driven system, and it's has numbers on four sides. So you actually rotate the cards to for a deck. It's been around for a while. You simply have so many cards, you get a chance to select a shooter. Once you select the shooter, you either flip another card, you get a result. If it's black, it's off the offensive card. If it's red, it's off the defensive card. And then you get a result. And there's things like there's zone defenses you can play. You can do a player defensive switch, but it's all based on that deck. And the replays I've done with at least Vermont and with the Celtics, the numbers have been, I mean, we're talking like points off. It's pretty impressive. And it has a very good fatigue system. But once you get in rhythm with that game, I created a couple charts for it for like timing. This way, you know, and I use iScore basketball app, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But I created that so I know when, you know, I can count when people come in, come out, and they have a great fatigue system of based on shots. And so it's just, yeah, it runs really smoothly and the results are really good. It has a really good power rating system that's really easy to understand. This way you're not having, you know, a horrible ranked team playing against the best ranked team and, you know, crushing them like you'd see in other games. But there is still a chance they could win that game. But you're not seeing, you know, some of the sometimes games produce like these ridiculous numbers with, you know, especially in college games total, because there's so much difference between the top ranked teams and the bottom ranked teams. Not saying they can't beat the top ranked teams, but it's an anomaly when it happens.
Yeah. You mentioned iScore, so now I got to go back to baseball and ask, because I heard you say scorebooks. So do you do all by hand scoring for the baseball?
Yep. I initially start with all hand score on my table. I have a nice 6-foot table in my man cave here. And then I use ball score, ball stat. I know some people don't like that program, but for me, that's the, I know how to use that program really well. So once I score, several games, I'll go, or say I play, you know, 14 games or 12 games for that weekend.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back into ball score, and then I'll just put all the data into there.
I know I get heat all the time for saying I like ball score and ball stat. And I just, you know, but I'm the same as you. Like I was running a league for a while and everybody wanted total stats. And I was like, just send me your score sheets. I will enter them all in and I will be able to kick out the totals, because I just got to a point where I could like quickly do it. And it was easy to like edit people's games and be like, I was hitting them up and like, you got 4 outs this inning. No, I don't. You do. Trust me.
Yeah. And I've used iScore baseball before also. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it works. I did a couple payoff pitch and I did APA on there also. And it's just slowing down on my iPad. So it was taking a long time to set lineups. Mm. And so I really enjoy the writing, like the connection to paper. And, but of course you always like, oh man, there's only 2 outs in that inning. So I have to, you know, how am I going to fix this? So it's usually like, you know, hey, they got caught stealing. Okay.
Yeah.
or, you know, there's, yeah, you need a, yeah, it's easy to fix, but the computer systems definitely help. And once you learn ball score, ball stat, it's pretty easy and you can score those games pretty quick.
Agreed. And what about football? How do you typically like to do your scoring for football or tracking?
Normally I do it all by hand, and then I have I made an Excel spreadsheet that auto calculates all the numbers. It's not the best system. I've tried iScore football. I've been dabbling with that a little bit. I've gotten better at it, but still not. It's just a little clunky to me. Mm. And I know that there's a football helper out there that some people love. There's been some updates on it, I think, that have fixed some issues I think that had, but I'm not opposed to using those systems. But right now for me, I just don't mind doing by hand.
Yeah. 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 I get the same feeling as you do sometimes, that I just like that connection to pen and paper. I mean, I'm using an electronic like tablet, like the Remarkable tablet, and I get to, you know, but it still like feels like pen and paper, even though I can email myself the scorecard when I'm done. So.
Yeah. I went from using really nice pencils to now I use the Bic fine point pens.
Oh.
And then it depends on the paper I'm using. So sometimes, you know, for football, I'll use the medium pen, and then I'm very OCD about my pens as well. So has to be blue. Same at work. I use the same pens. It's just comfortable. It feels good. It feels right.
There you go. And you got to feel comfortable. So that's great. Yeah. Let's see what else, anything else that we should talk about with, either of your two main leagues there?
No, yeah. I think the reason people always ask, why do we play, fictional leagues? For me, I'm pretty, once you've met me before, but I'm pretty OCD. I wouldn't say I'm stuck in my ways, but I have certain ways of doing things that they work for me. And so when I try to play, like a replay of a baseball season or, an actual season, I'm very OCD. So I have to go get all the lineups. I have to make sure my pitching staff is exactly for that day. I have to make sure I have cards for those players. So if the player's not carded, I'm going to have a problem. I need to go either create the card or do something else to modify that. And so at least with fictional, I have nothing to judge upon. It's a wide open space. History has not been written yet. And so for me, when I compare with, results with historical stuff, if it's not accurate to me, it changes my opinion of the game or the system. But again, with fictional, it's an open book and you can do what you want with it.
Yeah.
And you can modify things and there's no right or wrong. As long as if you're creating seasons, there's balance. You have to balance, but there's no right or wrong. You're creating history.
There you go. When it comes to baseball, let's go with baseball. I have a couple of other questions I'll ask. Let's start with reliever rest. How do you manage reliever rest?
Sure. So in the it depends on the season.
That's true.
But right now, if a player pitches one inning, then they can still pitch the next. And of course, in my weekend baseball, it's a 3-game series on the weekend. So it's a doubleheader, or it's a Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday. And then for the Eastern Adirondack, of course, there's no lights on baseball fields. So you play 2-game series. But in the 2000 sets for me, it's one day. If it's two innings, you have a day rest. If it's three or more, you're out for the, you're pretty much out for the series.
Got it.
For the dead ball, I've had it, where I allow a pitcher to pitch. They could pitch 9 games over a series. So say if they pitch in a game, they pitch 7 innings. Well, they may come into a pitch for a game, for an inning for the next game as well.
Okay.
Because, if you look at dead ball, I have a lot of complete games. It's low scoring. Like our best player in that league is Glendale Gouldsberry, the Golden Goose. Had like a 1.93 or something ERA. He was 15-3 in 19 starts. Just phenomenal with, it was like 13 complete games and like 8 shutouts or 7 shutouts.
Yeah.
So it just depends on the series, on the year, but I do try to keep a mostly consistent with innings pitched or overall they can pitch nine innings total for this or 7 innings for this total series. And sometimes it's based upon what their ratings are for pitcher. So if it's an ace, they'll have a higher rating. If it's, if it's a star, semi-star, they may pitch less.
Okay.
And same with my fatigue. I've modified my fatigue. So it's no longer 3-3 for like traditional. If you're a ace or a star, it could be 4-3. You have four fresh and 3. And then in dead ball, if you're an ace star like the Golden Goose, you could be you could have 7 or 8 fresh and 1 that's not fresh.
Oh wow, very cool. Now, do you use full star and half stars or anything like that in terms of? No, everybody's probably got an equal shot, right?
Yeah, I create it so that everyone has availability. So again, I do some research to see for each season compared to Major League Baseball, so most data. So if you have catchers that only played, so many catchers percent of the league played in, 80% of the league. So actually, I roll in the chart and then I assign those availabilities and then backups. So if you have a catcher that has availability of 4, the backup catcher, because the teams in dead ball are really small.
Yeah.
There's, I think 15 players or maybe less. Then the backup would be a 2. And so it's just availability. And then if they get injured, then there's different charts to look at. It's still kind of a work in process with the availability. I'm not 100% sold on it. I'm still trying to find a better way, but it seemed to be working so far.
Yeah. Similar to the way goalies work in like hockey blasts and stuff. Right. So.
Yeah. I think that's where it really came from.
Yeah.
That kind of inspiration. I just need to look at a little bit more how I can figure out, hey, how many players are going to be possibly injured this game or is that realistic?
Good point.
Yeah. And I do some in-game injuries. I do allow injuries in games, but a lot of the, if you're rated as a 6 overall, so it's obviously for a D6, if you're rated a 6, you'll probably get injured in a game, but you probably won't miss any games.
Got
it's it. Likely if you do it, maybe one or two games.
Okay, that makes sense. And then my second question for you too is around coaches' decisions. Do you use cards? Do you have your own method for deciding? Like, you know, are you pretty much like a straight by the book kind of guy?
So it depends. That's a standard answer, right? So in 2000, my 2003 season for weekend baseball league, I was using up to six coaches' cards per team. Now I don't use any cards at all. I just let it roll. Same with the dead ball or the my Eastern Adirondack. There's no cards at all.
Okay.
So I'll make decisions to bunt. Obviously, in dead ball baseball, you're going to bunt more. I have some guidelines for like using hit and run. Okay. But you know, luckily, like you look at the 2003 to 2005 season, there's not a whole lot of bunting or hit and runs. It's a lot of it's a lot of power and a lot of hitting, and the pitching's okay, but not like it was back in the 1900s.
Definitely not. Yeah. And stolen base is a completely different realm too, right? Like,
yeah. And I base, for my leagues, I base stolen bases on total attempts, not necessarily how many stolen bases.
Okay.
And then I have a chart for based on the catcher's rating, arm, because I do different ratings for arm and then also for pass balls. I do separate ratings and for fielding for catchers.
Oh.
And so I compare the catcher's arm with the player's speed or the run rating. And then I have a different chart I roll on for that as well.
Okay.
So if you have a double active runner and you have a iron catcher with has an iron arm, you're going to steal safely a lot. But if you have a gold on a gold, you'll probably have 50-50.
Got it. Yep. And are you, do you pretty much like decide, like, does that include like a jump rating or anything or no?
No, I've been using just the straight, if the book says to steal, I attempt to steal. So again, the idea is taking the attempts and the stolen bases combined together. So if I have 60 attempts, every time I see a stolen base on the game charts, I'm going to attempt the stolen base.
Got it.
It's not an automatic. I just automatically go to the charts.
Okay. That makes sense.
But we're front loading the data to combine all the attempts, not just the actual stolen bases.
And how about advancements? How do you handle those, like base hits or like sac flies?
For the most part, it's standard, just a standard, the standard single base, two bases, three bases. I sometimes, will look at, if runners can advance from second to third on fly ball to, fly ball to right field or maybe to deep right center. I'll modify depending on who's on base and how that works. If there's a base open on third, but I pretty much stick with the rule book.
You mentioned that you come up with some different ratings for catchers. Do you do anything for outfielders to get like more of an arm rating, or you just go straight like pretty much traditional with History Maker where it's one rating?
One rating, but actually, that's a good point. I probably should look at doing. Maybe my inspiration for my upcoming season is to do arm ratings. Because I think that would actually matter. That's actually a pretty good idea.
There you go. Yeah. I like the fact that in History Maker, there are at least two ratings for the outfielders. They got the speed rating comes into play. And arm ratings are kind of tough. Like if you don't, unless you have an idea about what you think you're going to have, there is some judgment that has to go into an arm rating. You can tell a little bit from the stats, but if a guy's got a really good arm in Major League Baseball, they're just not running on him anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Okay. And then what do you, now going back to football, similar question, like straight play calling, or do you kind of come up with your own charts for play calling too?
Again, that depends on the game. So some games, I'll actually create my own chart to use. But for like second season and for cold snap, I'll primarily use more with second season. I'll use the replay chart or the replay cards to choose the plays. And then for cold snap, I'll usually use the regular what comes with the game, which works pretty well. For the most part, works pretty well. The problem I think I've come across now is like the 1991 or 92 like Dolphins. They were like a -6 on offense.
Yeah.
So you have to every time you get a run, you need to roll a d20 and then. If it's a result of one, then you get a pass play. Then you got to figure it out from there. So this way, you're actually getting enough passes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've done some other research, or not research, but I guess research articles. People use quota systems. So if you're allowed 22 runs per game for like the Bills, you would use 22 runs per game, and you know each player gets so much quota per game.
Yeah.
So with my my NFL seasons, I'm making. I quasi use a quota system. So I'll some players will be allowed 1.5 screen or short passes per game, and like one medium or long pass per game. And there was an article actually through APA that shows kind of how to do that with splitting the medium and long from your short or screen passes to get the, to get fairly accurate results.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Like in 98, yeah, 98, like Eric Molds, I allow him half, technically half a short or screen pass per game. And then 3.5 medium or long, because his he averaged 20 yards per game, or per reception season.
That's pretty. So, high.
I mean, it makes. I mean, you can really skew this. You can really skew the stats if you by selecting them yourselves. But I much prefer to have it have the system select it for me, and then I can select what available receiver I have or runner I have.
Got it. Okay. And now. I don't know if it's an I'll give you the choice of saying they're pretty even, but is it about, with the fictional for you, more enjoyment out of actually playing the games, or do you get a lot of enjoyment, is it more enjoyment in the league creation, off-season stuff that you have to do for the leagues?
Yeah, I think the creation is probably more interesting to me. Like I've been playing second season a little bit, like yesterday I played a couple quarters or almost a full game. Almost a full game. With the Bills in the San Diego in 1998. But yeah, enjoy the creation part of it. Cause once we get all the data points, we balance it all out. I use Excel. I love Excel. People I know dislike Excel, but Excel is probably the best program, to do a lot of the stuff in.
Okay.
Besides card making. But yeah, once we get all the data in there, all the team cards made, or even for baseball, we get all the team cards made. Then I'll actually go in, even though I'm not a narrative guy, then I'll go back through, I'll look at my past seasons, and I'll actually give the team a general narrative about what's going on with draft picks, and kind of give that narrative that people really want. Again, it's not really that I want it, but I know other people enjoy seeing that part of it. So I'm willing to tap into that side of doing things and, hopefully produce a good product.
Yeah, yeah,
and I enjoy writing. So, I think creative writing is always a good thing. It's good for critical thinking, and it's a good thing to do. So, it makes me think, and that's a good thing.
Keep those synapses going, right? yeah. Now, do you find every year you're tweaking your charts a little bit, or is it pretty much you feel like at this point you've got a pretty solid system?
I think football, I have a solid system with the charts and how players advance. And then, of course, modifying them to balance them out. Mm-hmm. Baseball, it always seems like I'm, depending on what era we're playing in, I always feel like I have several different charts. And so I have a chart to create new players. But I just can never, it just doesn't feel perfect. But I don't know if you can ever get perfection with these, especially if you're always looking for it. I just don't think it's going to occur. I think I have a good system, but I think there's things I can still improve upon, like availability charts,
yeah.
And some of the creation stuff and how we go about it.
Okay.
This way, I mean, my ratings aren't too out of whack. I know in one season in 2004, we actually had a 400, a rookie hit 402, and he was I don't remember what he was his overall his qualities, but not completely out of the realm. But also, it's talking to Keith, he's like, it's an amateur league. They could bet 500.
Yeah,
you never know. So in theory, it wasn't too out of whack, but we've been seeing good results at least.
Excellent. All right. So what is next on the horizon for you? Any other kinds of fictional leagues you're looking at, or you think you're pretty set?
No, I don't know if I'm expanded at all. I know that I'm going to definitely work on either a 1914 or 1923 Eastern Adirondack season. That's my next for that set. I'm in the middle of 2005 still. I created the Canadian College University set, which is 28 teams, which is pretty in depth. And then the IFPC. I thought about doing hockey, but I haven't played a lot of hockey. I used to play a lot of Hockey Blast, but I haven't played a lot lately. I thought about doing a couple college sets for that as well. I know Bob Hansen does an awesome job with the season for play.
Yeah.
But I thought about doing a college set. Of course I used to play a lot of lacrosse as well, Lacrosse Blast, but I haven't touched that a whole lot, but Yeah, I'm probably going to stick primarily with the baseball and the football, and depending on the when the basketball game comes out for play. Again, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard for me to beat classic college and pro.
Yeah.
But there's no fictional set. There's no fictional set either, and there's no tinkering. That's a game I definitely can play an as played replay and feel very confident that you're going to get good results. But I think I may dabble in creating my own small like amateur town based basketball league, possibly when that game comes out. So we'll see. I just need to I want to see how Keith works the assists ratings. Yeah. Which is always a challenge. And that's been, I think, the challenge overall when I saw it last. But still, I can make my own system in that. I think it could be fun. So that's we will see.
Cool. That sounds good. You mentioned red, white, and blue. Do you do fictional for that too? Or are you a traditional? Yeah, fictional.
Yeah, I'm not a huge NASCAR fan, but I love Scram. I love red, white, and blue racing. It's probably one of the best game engines on the market, just how it works and how it flows and how smooth it is. And every time I play, I'm just like, man, I don't know why I don't play this more.
Yeah.
But I play the 2012 Scram season, and I'm currently in 2013 Scram season.
Okay.
And I'm a Montana fan, so.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be able to use it for at least 10 years, it sounds like. So I think this is the first year without them. So.
But yeah, every year I go to play, I always get a new set. So this year, I'm not sure if I'm going to be there because I have a lot going on at work, and so I'm just not sure if I'm gonna make it. But either way, I'm gonna get the newest set for Scram, even if I won't play it for another 20 years. At least I'll have it.
There you go. All right, Lenny. Anything else?
No, I think that covers everything.
Okay, and I think I know you post a lot about your leagues on the Facebook page. So if anyone's looking for these leagues, they can check it out there. Is it the IFPC, right? IFPC. You guys have your own Facebook page, but that's pretty much for the league, right?
Yeah, I think it's privatized, I believe. But we do post a lot, or I post a lot on the play community group, and then also on the Delphi forums. Some people occasionally will post on there. I've been not on the Delphi forums as much as I used to be, but that's one place. I know there's I can't remember his name, but he's been going through the whole Associated Canadian College University season 2022 season. He went through the entire season, which is pretty cool. Which is 24 teams at that point. I think 8 games or 10 games apiece. But he has a pretty cool replay on the Delphi, and he also has a whole website that has all the data, the games. It's a lot more than I can ever do, and it's pretty impressive.
Awesome. That's great. All right. So if you want to check out the leagues that Lenny's been involved with, check out the Play Facebook page. And Lenny, hopefully we'll get a chance to touch base soon, but really appreciate your time tonight.
Yeah, no problem at all. Appreciate having me.
All right. Thanks a lot. And that's a wrap on this week's episode. I want to thank Lenny for taking the time out of his busy schedule to sit down with me this week and talk a little bit about running fictional leagues. As I kind of deep dive into fictional this year, it's really helpful to hear the approach. And I'm not going to lie, I got a little bit of the itch thanks to Lenny and kind of going through what he does to organize the leagues. It's not something I'm going to have time for this year, but I think definitely in the years to come, either next year or the years beyond, I could definitely see myself sitting down and starting to create like that kind of fictional universe to a degree. It certainly seems labor intensive. I can definitely appreciate all the work that he has to put into everything and creating just these overall universes, creating that college universe to lead into the pro universe for the Canadian football, running through different historical versions of this weekend baseball league that he had started for himself. It's really cool. And it gives him a chance to try out his league, his formats in different eras for baseball. So, I can definitely see the desire to try to do that. You can keep up with, as we mentioned, you can keep up with all of his leagues on the Facebook community page for Play Games. You can check out some of the Delphi forums to see how that working out as well. But yeah, it's going to be cool to watch. And hopefully, you know, come June at play.con, I'll be able to get some updates on the IPFC from whoever might be attending there, or the IFPC. So appreciate that and look forward to hearing how that league is going at play.con. Usually there's an update. They're usually not quite done with the season by the time we get to play.con. And that was in July, so I could imagine that in June, they may not quite be at the finish line just yet either. So it'll be interesting to see where they're at, get an update on how the league is going from some of the various members who do attend play.com. All right, so next week, we're going to take an inside look at Face to the Mat. I have wrapped up another season of wrestling, and we'll take a deep dive on the game and talk about it in some details. And I've talked about Face to the Mat a little bit before, but went back and realized never really did that inside look. And I think the game mechanics are really interesting and worth kind of talking more about. So we're going to be doing that next week. Until then, thanks for listening.